This is CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, good morning, everybody. Here we are, we're live. It is CliffCentral.com on a Wednesday morning, almost the end of August. Yep, you can feel it. I can feel it coming in the air tonight. What is happening?
Oh.
Yeah, right.
I can feel it. Sorry, never mind.
Where's that from?
I don't know. Just wanted to go for the highest note.
I think
note
you mean can you feel it?
Yeah. Oh. I can feel it coming. Never mind. Semantics.
You're changing stuff here. All right.
Autistic license.
We're off to a busy start today. Mavs is here. Sia's here. Amanda and Gord Laws. Good morning, Gord.
Morning, guys.
How are you, dude?
Hey.
I'm good. How are you guys?
Awesome.
Oh, my word. Mavs is in with some properly awesome hair.
Oh, fuck. Here we go.
She has no idea how to take a compliment. I thought I was bad, but jeez, it's just she can't
thank
take
you,
it.
God.
And
thank
it's color-coded
you
with go your jacket.
How dope is her jacket?
I know. It's a red Cliff Central. Oh, it's a go. Yeah. Okay, no, I see it's not a Cliff Central jacket. Okay.
I've been eyeing it for the past couple of days, really. So I'm just waiting for her to take it off at least once for
you
to try it
you
on.
You wouldn't be alone this year.
It's good to see you, Gordon.
Where's this going?
So, what's up, Gordon Laws?
Me, again.
What's up with you?
Sparrow fart in the morning because of my love for you guys.
Oh, well, it's always nice to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I'm up early for the second time this week. I'm sure you guys have gone through it to death, but there was the Mayweather-McGregor fight on the weekend.
How did you like that?
I found
you were actually one of the people who cared.
Thoroughly entertaining, which was the point. Like, it's amazing how much internet anger and people have like
people were angry.
No, other people like you commented on what you thought was a great fight. McGregor did really well. I was entertained. You know, he did better than I thought he would.
Mm-hmm.
Worth getting up. Nice brekkie with friends. And people are like, you must be wrong. there was no way. And like, it was unfair. No, it was fair. What was he doing there in the first place? Your opinion sucks.
Oh.
And you're just like, guys, really like. It was an entertainment spectacle. I found it spectacular and entertaining.
Uh-huh.
Okay,
move
on with life.
Why can't people settle on that entertainment is good enough in and of itself? Why does it have to be right or wrong or theoretically provable or any of that stuff? What is up with people that their brains are disconnecting they're decompressing? It's like they're unable to figure that actually this it's okay if it's just entertainment.
Yeah, exactly. And also like this bizarre kind of you know, 1 + 1 = 3 sort of logic where one of the arguments that came up was this whole idea that the thing in terms of the fighters and their staff and whatnot, they were making $200 million. So yeah. 125 to 75, give or take, in favor of Mayweather.
Casually so.
Yeah. But people are like, this is outrageous. They talk about the royal we. How can we as a species give our money to them like
exactly
that?
It's
millions of people with $20 each.
Yeah.
And also, all these people who are giving their money, supposedly. I mean, I didn't get asked for any cash.
No, but yeah. I mean, overseas
and
you would have.
And I didn't watch it. No, you wouldn't have. You would have paid if you'd gone to the actual match or if
no,
you were involved.
No, pay-per-views, dude.
Sure, but then that's fine. And those people have asked to be a part of this.
Exactly. The people who are like, but they think of it in terms of some grand Illuminati that are going, okay,
no,
there's $1 billion this month.
No, here's the problem. Everybody thinks that everybody else is going to try and take them.
Yeah, and
the only people taking you are the politicians.
Yeah, totally. Cheese like.
The people you vote for over and over again like an idiot. Those are the people taking you.
But the point of the argument was that like there's this $200 million in the world and we as a species should be directing it towards UNICEF and the starving children and not glorifying these like combat people. But the thing is, it's not like someone went, okay, let's take the $200 million from the starving children and give it to these two fighters. A whole shitload of people were willing to pay $20 each.
Yeah.
It's the same with football and being outraged by what players get paid.
And
they're
maybe,
the best
and,
at something
and,
4
and,
billion
and
people
horror,
do.
Horror of horrors. There are probably a lot of people who would rather be entertained by a fight like this than help a starving child. How about that?
Or maybe do both, you know? $20.
Or maybe do both. Or you could have joined the 3 million people who found a way to stream it illegally online, because that's what happened.
They say 100 million.
Oh, 100 I'm sorry.
100 million people worldwide streamed illegally.
But then you should have known the right connections.
But if you, as a person, are going, we should never have given them this money, and you didn't watch it or pay to watch it,
you didn't. So don't worry.
Yeah, so don't worry.
All right, let's go to Simba. He's on the Skype line from San Diego. Good morning, Simba.
Hey, Gareth. What's up, team?
What's up with you?
Yeah.
Not much. I just called about, well, Gord actually had the perfect, I think, analysis on the boxing.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I watched it. Of course, it was around 8 o'clock for us, or 9 o'clock-ish at night for us. But, you know, my friend put down the money for the pay-per-view, and it was, you know, like, the way I look at it is, you know, what's any product worth? Any product is worth what people are willing to pay for it. So if it's worth $300 million, if people are willing to put the money in, that's how capitalism works. So I think it was fair and fine. It was a bloody entertaining fight.
Totally.
Yeah, all right. Well, then there's not much else to talk about there, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think it's good. But the reason I called, actually, is a couple of reasons.
We've solved for X.
The reason I called is I was catching up on some podcasts from about 3 weeks ago. And someone had posted in about how they listened to you guys in double speed. So I decided to do that, and I couldn't get it either. It was just way too fast for me. So as I was doing that, I used an app called Downcast to listen to you guys. Mm-hmm. And when I'm not using the Cliff Central app, in your app store and the Google Play store now.
All right, Simba, we see you.
As I was scrolling through to get back to normal speed, it took me to half speed, which was fucking amazing. You guys just sound completely drunk.
Oh no.
Now that's something we've got to listen to.
What would happen if we got completely drunk and then you did us at half speed?
Oh, can you imagine?
I probably listened to like half an hour in half speed and I realized I'm almost at my destination, so I have to go back to normal speed. But when I want a really good laugh, I go to half speed, and you guys are just twice as entertaining.
Who sounds the worst at half speed?
Gareth, by far. And it's like, The tone of voice remains the same, but it slows down. Oh, it's just the best.
That's hysterical. Maybe I do sound like that drunk. I'll get someone to record me one day.
Be a good experiment for us to try talk at half speed for a minute or two and then see what that sounds like if you play it at half speed. Oh, half speed inception.
All right, dude. Thanks very much.
Hey, no problem. And I saw your post on the Houston stuff. Mm. But people are taking care of each other down there, man. It's pretty crazy what's going on.
You know, it's beautiful to see. I've got friends in Houston, and they were kind of updating us, sending us little videos of what's going on their street and everything else. I've got these WhatsApp groups that are on fire at the moment with stuff from Houston. But it's amazing how in a civilized, forward-thinking, decent city like Houston, and it really is, despite all the things that happened in Katrina, which was the worst part of what could happen in a city like that when people don't do enough for each other. This time I think they realized now is the time to step up and look after each other, and they really did.
And I think it's the government that learned a lot about their lack of response in Katrina. But
not the government. I mean, having Trump and Melania there in her high heels, I don't think did very much for anyone. What this was we've been through this before, guys. We know what we have to do for each other. It's ordinary citizens. Again, don't worry about the government. The government's only interested in looking after itself. These are ordinary people standing up and looking after each other. And that to me is beautiful to see.
Yeah, that's what really impresses me about this country. But thanks for your time, guys. All right, enjoy the rest of your day.
Always good to check in with you.
Yes. Talk to you soon.
Yeah. Have a good one.
All right.
Stay well.
Okay. Thanks, Simba. Wow.
Okay, so it's 20:06 in the morning, and Mabala has already been hit on twice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Slow start to the day, Mabala.
Talking about McGregor and Mayweather, here's our little office betting pool and how that went.
The moment has finally arrived. Simpire, how do you feel about actually winning the office bet?
I feel fabulous.
Yep, she got it right. 10 rounds.
Oh, you don't say.
What?
The point is, Simpiwe was really excited to take other people's stuff.
Jeez.
Everybody offered up something that was meaningful and valuable to them. And then when it came to actually handing it over, all of them were like, oh, shit, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
And she was like, I don't care about your feelings. I'm not interested in whether or not you're sad about this. You offered it up. Now it's mine.
What gave you the inclination, or like, how did you come up with your guess?
So I picked Mayweather because he was the only boxer. And I picked 10 rounds because I knew it had to be entertaining. And yeah, so I picked 10 because I thought that would be the perfect number. And boom, shakalaka, it was.
Okay, so I'm ready to hand over my hot dog phone cover. But Alyssa, how does it make you feel that you're now about to hand over the fidget spinner?
I don't want to talk about this.
Oh.
I don't want to talk about this.
But you know.
Poor Alyssa, she loves that fidget spinner. You didn't mind getting rid of your hot dog, cover because it was blocking your camera anyway.
Exactly.
Oh. Shame, Sia, but poor Balesa.
No,
it was cool as hell, that hot dog.
All I'm hearing is beep, 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 beep.
Dory, you now have to hand over your...
Well, the original deal was that I would give up my aux cable, which I really don't mind, but Simpiwe doesn't have a car. We're renegotiating to maybe replace it with something that you can actually get some value out of.
But she wanted it. Despite not having a car to play, she thought there are other places she could put this aux cable, and she really did want it.
See how everyone is attached to everything now?
Mm-hmm. Suddenly everybody doesn't want to give anything
all
up.
Of these
but
excuses.
What I'm seeing here, Sia, is that this is bigger than the fight itself.
There's basically going to be another McGregor-Mayweather fight in here because people are now uncomfortable and awkward about losing.
Well, I mean, the person you need to speak to really about who's sad is Amanda.
Yeah, you know, Amanda, this is a traumatic time for you right now, isn't it?
I'm so hurt. Like, I don't know. I really thought Connor was going to take it. And I was so confident.
You even changed your Facebook profile picture.
But now, like, I honestly thought he had it. That's why I thought, I'm going to put the Britney CD in and it's fine. I'm going to get the Britney CD back.
When can I expect the
movie? I said I'd change to like an ice cream for you or something, a Britney CD.
You know, I'm feeling Britney. I'd love to listen to some old Britney and then play with my fidget spinner whilst I'm at it.
She's taking such joy in taking things away from people.
Mm-hmm. Properly.
And then Jane found out that she has to give something up. Remember, Jane put up her child as her precious thing.
As one does.
Yeah, so she found out that she had to give her baby to Simpiwe. This is how it went.
Ask Jane, do you remember what you put into the bet?
Yes.
Remind me again?
But I can't just give up my baby like that.
But ask Jane, this was a bet, and you offered to put your baby. So now you lost.
Yes, I lost.
So you know you have to give your baby to Simpiwe now.
Simpiwe? She can't even own one bed, even one dog. How can she handle the baby?
Don't you think she'd like put the baby in a nice dog or something?
Nice dog?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. She just wears dogs all the time, so maybe she can do that for the baby.
Or maybe she can take her dog and put my baby in the back all the time. I understand.
So, like... Will you see the baby over weekends now? Do you think some people will give you visitation rights?
Oh, Mudimu Ajiso, my baby to Simpiwe. I don't think so, guys.
So that's not going well for Simpiwe. I don't think she's going to get the kid.
What did she get instead, though? I mean, there has to be a trade-off, right?
Yeah, there has to be something. Was there a discussion around that, Amanda?
Well, apparently today's handover day, where we have to give our stuff. But... I'm still not giving up the CD. I think it's unfair because Dory gets to change her. Now Dory's not giving the aux.
Wow.
And Jane's not giving the baby. So why can't I change to an ice cream or something? So no, it's not happening.
You got your CD here?
Ooh. I have. And I went in the car with some Pure yesterday and I played that CD and I just showed her what she was not getting.
Oh.
So no.
Oh, I don't know. I think we need an official adjudicator here to make sure this handover happens.
CD... only equates to 100 rand, okay?
Yeah.
Which is like... Gord, I got it when I was like 8. So it's like something that's...
No, then you shouldn't have put it up for collateral.
But like I said, I had faith in Connor. Like,
Yes, but that's still you taking a risk. I'm busy reading a fascinating book called Predictably Irrational by Dan Ariely. It's unbelievable.
It's very good, huh?
You've read it. Yeah. Mm. It's unbelievable the way that we attach value to stuff just because it's ours as opposed to what value it actually has.
Oh, yeah, no. The intrinsic value is zero, but we because it's ours.
And the best example, just to quickly cover it, is like when if you drive to a shop and you're buying a pen and you're going to go buy a pen that's 100 rand and they say to you, or rather it's 200 rand, excuse me, you're going to go buy a 200 rand pen. And as you arrive in the shop, you're like, cool, where's the pen? It's 200 rand. That's what I saw it advertised for. Here's my 200 rand. And your mate goes, dude, you know what? They're 15 minutes across town, a 15-minute drive away. The same pen is 100 rand at a different shop. Mm-hmm. And you go, yeah, shit, you know, it's 200 rand here or 100 rand somewhere else. I'll drive across town for 100 rand. However, if you go do the same process to buy a 5,000 rand suit and you're there and the suit's there and it's in your size and the guy's like, here's your suit. And your friend goes, dude, before you buy that suit, 15 minutes across town, the same suit is 4,900 rand. It's 100 rand less. You're going to go, ah, screw it. I'll just buy it here for 5 grand. But the value of 100 rand remains the same, and the cost of and the schlep of a 15-minute drive mm-hmm. remains the same. But you compare it to the value of the thing you're about to buy. So 100 rand is 100 rand. A 15-minute drive is a 15-minute drive, but you will drive to get the pen for half price.
You'll suspend you won't logic. Drive.
Mm. Exactly. And it's all about those kind of things. Predictably Irrational by Dan Ariely, and it's a really, really interesting book.
Very good. I actually listened to the audiobook of that. You had to listen to that on half speed just to be able to take it all in.
Yeah, me too, audiobook, by the way. Those things are killer. I love them.
All right. It's time for us to check in on the five things you need to know to start your day. Here's Mabale Moloi. The latest from Colcacchio Pizzeria is that if you're looking for high-quality food and great service teamed with a relaxed atmosphere, then Colcacchio Pizzeria is the place for you. Colcacchio Pizzeria is a family-friendly environment which allows everyone to enjoy being part of the whole pizzeria experience.
No bollocks. I had Colcacchio yesterday. I had a create your own salad and it was awesome.
Nice one, dude. All right, Mubs, what do you got for us?
Pay back the money is the phrase that Finance Minister Malusi Gigaba will be chanting to Angola. South Africa will press the newly elected Angolan government to pay back 850 million rand that it apparently owes to SAA. And we all know SAA could do with every cent that comes their way.
Pay back the money.
Indeed, the airline runs one of Africa's biggest fleets, but it has been making a loss.
Pay back the money.
Yes, SAA is owed a total of some 1 billion rand in revenue earned in other African countries, with Angola being the single largest debtor.
Well, why do they have money that is owed to us? Who made that stupid deal in the first place?
And how come so much?
Well, the finance minister, Malusi Gigaba, said that Treasury was talking to the country as well as other African governments that owe the airline to get the funds repatriated, adding, "We understand that Angola is facing its own difficulties economically." It's kind of like that situation when you borrow somebody money and then they take their time in paying you back.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like.
Or don't pay it back.
Or there's don't
no money
pay it back.
That I'm going to be paying back.
And in a bid to keep its planes flying, SAA is seeking a 10 billion rand bailout from Treasury.
Maybe they've got some Britney CDs lying around.
I don't know how those will be able to help them much, Gord. These are pretty big numbers. But our government apparently pressing Angola's government to just, you know, pay back the money. Now, Uber have said that they're going to be pulling what has become a heavily criticized feature from its app. This is the feature that allows Uber to keep tracking us for up to 5 minutes after we've ended our trip. The security chief has told Reuters that they're doing this because of a privacy concern as the ride services company tries to fix what has become a very poor reputation that they have accumulated over time. Now, the change, which restores users' ability to share location data only while using the app, is expected to be announced this week. It will be rolled out through Apple first, the iPhone users starting this week, and then with, you know, the Android people getting second.
So they've been following us for 5 minutes after we've
after you've ended your trip, after you've gotten out of the driver's car.
But why?
The app is still tracking your location.
Well, they can watch you walk up the stairs to your bedroom and then go to sleep.
But why? I mean, what is the potential benefit of knowing where I am? It's like you dropped me off there. Okay, so I couldn't have gone far because I wouldn't logically get dropped off 2 blocks away from where I'm going and then walk the rest of the distance. So it's safe to say I'm going where you dropped me. Like, What? How can they benefit from knowing how far I travel for 5 minutes after they drop me off?
Apparently, it's all part of their data collection strategy. So I don't know if it's a case of them getting more information from the way that you move.
You're the product, you see.
So that it better enhances their ability to offer you a service, or maybe it feeds into them responding to requests quicker. I don't know, but they say that they've been doing this as part of their data collection.
Feels like that company are desperately, desperately trying to screw up their own reputation. I mean, they were like the darlings of the world when they launched.
Mm-hmm.
Between bad driver standards dropping and technology changes and starting to bill you before you have your ride and charging you if they can't find you, I'm like falling out of love with Uber. But then Taxify is another option, but their driver standards and car standards are lower, so you get some proper non-winners picking you up sometimes. It's cheaper and it seems to be a little bit more like good, well-intended, but yeah, they also...
Nothing's perfect. I like Uber. Full stop.
I do too, and I still use it. I just feel like they're trying globally. Like, there's so many countries. They just had to pay a massive fine. I forget the country, but somewhere in Asia to be able to continue.
Yeah, and they haven't been running everything very well. I mean, this Travis, whatever his name is, who was the CEO for such a long time, did himself no favors by... He lost his shit with one of his drivers once in a car. He was drunk or something, and... You know, you can't behave like that when you're the boss of the company.
There was something to do with sexual harassment or something like that. I don't know the details well enough, though, to comment. But some bad things happened there at head office as well.
Did you know that South African law does not grant religious marriages the same status as civil, customary, or same-sex marriages? This is according to at least one South African legal rights group who this week took the government to court in a campaign that is pressing for new legalization to recognize Muslim marriages as legally valid. Apparently what this means is that because a marriage is not recognized under the South African law, it is difficult for Muslim women to seek divorce through the courts under common law or to gain a fair share of assets when it splits Viltime.
Yes.
Failure to recognize polygamous Muslim marriages causes major disadvantages to women and children, according to the group. So they have decided to take the government to court so that they can just have another look at this legislation.
Yes.
I did not know that.
Well, it wouldn't be any different to the way that Muslim men in Muslim countries treat their women anyway. If you just divorce her, she's left with nothing in any case. There's no recourse in a place like Saudi Arabia.
But in a place like South Africa... they're looking for that recourse.
Yeah.
They're just asking for the government to recognize it in the same way that it recognizes all other unions.
Yeah, but then, honestly, there should only be one kind of marriage, and I don't even believe in this kind of marriage, but let's say for the lawyers, in order to protect both parties, there needs to be a contract of marriage. In other words, it needs to be a state-sanctioned union. In other words, a civil union. There are no other marriages that the state needs to busy itself with. If you, as the man and the woman who are getting married, are not prepared to just go down to the magistrate's court and sign a few papers, then your marriage isn't going to be recognized. That's nobody else's problem but yours.
Yeah, if you want to involve the government, involve the government.
Right. Or don't. And take the consequences of not being protected by it.
Yeah, totally.
You subject yourself to the court system, or you have to go and visit some mullah or imam or tribal leader or... a guy in a skirt, whatever it might be that you need to do. If you don't go along with the state, you can't then shit on the state for not looking after you after.
Surely it's easier to just go to the state in the first place and do the process than it is to fight them in court for the right to not do the process?
Listen, it's so easy. Come on. Everybody carries on like marriage is this difficult, complex thing. It's just you're basically incorporating. Dude. That's what you're doing. You and your wife or you and your husband are incorporating. That's it.
Yeah, well, making it contractually difficult to break up. But I've married four of my friends. I do wedding ceremonies for my friends.
Excuse me? You officiate weddings?
I do many of the wedding, but my friends are typically not religious, neither am I. So I do a ceremony, and I like to think I do a pretty good job of it. So
my goodness.
I've done four, And they just go either shortly before or shortly after. You go visit the, I think it's Home Affairs, I could be wrong. You sign a thing, it takes 15 minutes. It's typically not a long queue at the marriage window. It takes 15 minutes and your official legal marriage date is two, three, four days before your wedding date. You celebrate your anniversary on your wedding. And then you just have a legal document, so, you know.
See, because it used to be that the priest would do this, and he'd swing the incense, and he'd hold your hands together. You have to swap rings, and you'd have to say how much you'd look after each other and care for each other for all eternity. Actually, it's just, I swear to become husband, wife to XY, and we want it recognized by the state. Boom.
Yeah. And then you have your mates do a whole long thing about how it's beautiful and there's promises and love.
Yeah, but that stuff doesn't make that stuff is not the marriage.
No, it's not legally binding at all. Like, once you've signed the document, and typically the pastor or the, you know, religious officiator will be there with the legal documents, will have the right to act on behalf of the state and sign your legal thing for you. Those two processes don't have to be combined. They don't have to be one process.
Gord, do you dress up for the occasion?
I'll wear a tie.
Shorts, t-shirts.
That's his idea of dressing. I'll wear a tie.
I dress up for weddings and funerals.
Okay.
And you sound so youthful.
Oh, thanks, Gareth.
Right, what, anything else you want to throw in, Mubs?
I just envisioned you in this robe.
Yeah, I want to get into this a little later on. This is interesting. I think people will be fascinated. Gord Law's marriage officer.
I do it, dude, and I'll do it. If you pay me enough, I'll do it. Do it free for my friends. It's a mission, but it's awesome.
I've done it once.
How was it for you?
Oh, my... Hold up, you dark horses. Anyway,
all right, we'll talk about it just now. Yeah. Let Mubs finish her work, for heaven's sake.
A California man has shared his final moments with friends on Facebook before he died.
What, was he dying anyway?
Yes, Gareth.
Okay.
He didn't want to feel alone. So Conan Serrano, who had been ill while recovering from a motorcycle accident, posted the heartbreaking message to the social media platform and then died shortly afterwards at his home.
He died live, or he went, stopped his video and then shortly afterwards
listen,
died?
I don't think that he died live.
So then it's technically a snuff film if he did die live.
Oof. Dying live has got some awesome contradiction about it. Sorry to laugh at this.
He had been regularly posting content to his page regarding his health, as well as his ongoing struggles to afford health care in the United States. According to one post, he had been vomiting buckets of blood several days before his death. This isn't what people saw alive.
Thank God, I wouldn't watch that.
But he was unable to go to hospital to have it checked out because he did not have healthcare coverage. And then when it was time for the 39-year-old to admit, well, rather to face the inevitable, I guess he decided to do one final farewell thing on Facebook because he said he didn't want to feel lonely.
Dear Facebook friends. No, I'm fascinated to know whether this was a, hey everyone, I don't have long, goodbye and I love you, or if it was like, if he choked his last choke on air. It's a hugely different thing. A farewell message to my friends, because it's any day now, and
who cares?
Actual death.
I don't care. It's not someone, I mean, I wouldn't want to watch that. Some people would, I suppose, and let them. And I bet you it was not just his friends. They were probably outsiders watching it as well.
Loving it and then arguing with each other in the comments about who's wrong.
No, because people will never stop doing that. Uh-huh. Within seconds, people will always make it about themselves in any comment section.
Yeah, and who else is wrong?
Yes.
You can't be right without other people being wrong. Otherwise, you're just doing nothing in a vacuum.
Alrighty, there's no sport for this morning, and we've done plenty on Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather. So let's turn our attention to Gord Law's marriage officer for a second, and then we'll get to Anthea after that. So how much do you charge?
For my friends, I do it for free. I mean, I wouldn't charge them. And I haven't done it for like a stranger yet. So, you know, it's something that I would seriously consider doing as like a paid service, but you'd have to pay me quite a lot because it requires a day of my weekend. And I also have to sit with the relevant, couple and get to know them a little bit.
Oh, when it's like premarital therapy.
Yeah, you need at least one session. And I mean, brides understandably are typically quite, quite fussy about, they want to know if everything's going to be cool. So what's happened now is, because I've done four of them and each one has been different, I write a, for lack of a less dickheady word, I write a bespoke wedding for each couple, because I know them and they all have different personalities, different levels of how formal they want it. So now I've got like four written weddings that each go on about 10 to 20 minutes, and some of them are more humorous than others. So I could actually take these and cobble them into like six different templates and be like, cool, well, I add in a little bit about how you met. I add in a little bit about one or two jokes about each other that I could harvest from a conversation with each of you. And boom, I've got it. But I mean, I'm considering it because it's one of those things where it's fun until you start charging for it, and then it will become a pain in the balls. But at least you had
time to prep. I mean, you had four weddings and you had time to prep. You sound very experienced to me. I did it once, and I was only aware of the fact that I was actually presiding as the marriage officer, in inverted commas, when I arrived. I thought I was hosting.
You had to freestyle.
I thought I was hosting the reception.
That was rude of the bride and groom.
Not really. They sort of sprung it on me, although I might not have been listening.
It was like miscommunication.
Dude, it's like anything, any kind of public speaking thing. Like with me, the very first time I did, which in most cases was like primary school, when it comes to public speaking stuff, you're nervous. Going on TV, being on
your first
radio.
Wedding.
No. It's just I was like the first couple that asked me to do it. It's my best friend, and his wife was also good friends of mine for years. I have not been nervous doing a public speaking thing or a radio thing or a TV thing or anything like that. I have not been nervous since for 20 years, but I was nervous as hell.
Oh yeah.
For the first 5 minutes, I was literally like just trying to hold the paper steady because it's so important to them. But then I got into my groove and it was cool, and then the next three I was like, okay, wedding time, everybody sit down and listen.
You know, we are gathered here today.
I could literally bring one of them up if I get my laptop, it's over there, out.
No, I'm not,
and read you
married.
The read you the gist of it. But it's just a non-religious celebration of people that love each other, let me teach you about my religious beliefs for 20 minutes, and then I'll talk about the couple for 5 minutes, and then marry everyone. Doesn't need to involve...
That's a very smug thing to say.
It was smug, and it was intentionally smug. It doesn't need to be a lesson in someone else's religion to get two people married.
So would you marry, Wiccans or people who subscribe to that spaghetti church with the colanders and whatnot? I mean, how far out do you go with who you're prepared to marry if they're all non-religious ceremonies?
If I'm paid and I don't have to bring religion into it, I would consider marrying anybody.
Oh, that's beautiful. Mm. So good. That's very touching. Let's go to Anthea and see what's happening with our money. Here it is. It's time for the money shot.
She looks hard for the money. So hard for it, honey. She looks hard for the money. So you better treat her right.
Right. Good morning, Anthea.
Good morning, Gareth.
Your conversation with me yesterday about Uber changing its CEO must have come up three times during the course of the day yesterday. So there's always something relevant to pull out of the money shot.
Yes, and that's quite pertinent. The Uber is such an issue at the moment.
Yeah.
So anyway, on the markets yesterday, I think pretty much as expected, on the back of geopolitical tensions, Europe, Asia under huge amounts of pressure yesterday. So was our market. The U.S. opened lower, but then somehow through kind of last night's trading session shook it off, and their major indices actually closed in the green. Our market was down about 0.33%. Industrials and financials were the main drag on the JSE yesterday. We did see some good price action into the close, though, but it just wasn't enough to give us an overall green day. Then the Rand was also initially weaker and then somehow strengthened towards the end of the day. So it could well be U.S. buying of emerging markets at the end of yesterday. And then, of course, as expected, gold shares, huge day. Anglo Gold was up 8%, as was Harmony, up 7%. And, of course, the one gold share that we hang on to as a hedge in our portfolio, Sibanye Gold, finally actually justified their position yesterday. The share was up 7% yesterday.
Wow.
It was quite funny because Sibanye put out a trading statement saying that for the 6 months ending June, they're looking at a headline loss per share of R1.47. And actually the market just ignored it, to be honest. So,
wow.
Yeah, good for us. Platinum shares also traded higher. I think in the short term, with the political tensions, we're probably likely to see platinum follow gold, kind of the same trend. But we've spoken about platinum before, and the investment case for platinum is just not as strong as it used to be with all the electric cars coming on stream now. So that is one to kind of keep an eye out on. And then just talking about our portfolio, I decided to take some profit yesterday. I sold out of our entire holding of Exxaro, which we bought in June, so not long ago, at around 85 Rand a share. We sold yesterday at around 127 Rand 48.
Ka-ching.
So I'm definitely earning my keep. So now we're sitting on about, I think, just over 10% in cash, which is a big position in cash, but I'm okay with it, actually. You know, until I kind of understand whether or not we're going to go into another world war, sitting on cash for now, I think there'll be opportunities potentially presenting themselves. I'm in no rush to jump in.
Okay.
And then lastly, Cashbuild reported their financial results yesterday. I mean, this is a share we've spoken about as well before. It's been fairly resilient, I should say, especially considering they're operating in the consumer market where the economy is in recession. They reported yesterday revenue up 12% to 9.7 billion rand, but headline earnings was down 6%. So again, and actually I can explain that quite simply. It's an acquisition they made which pushed up their revenue, but the decrease in headline earnings was just because they're under a lot of pressure, like every other retailer in South Africa, to discount their selling price, basically, or put up sales to bring people into shop, but then their margins are under pressure. It's a real sad state of affairs at the moment, I'm afraid. I mean, hopefully, I guess, what we should see is with the interest rate cuts, that, or the one cut we had not so long ago, and hopefully another one coming before the end of the year, the consumer will start feeling a bit more confident and a bit more willing to spend, because that's really where the retailers are suffering. You know, consumers don't have money.
Right.
And yeah, they're tightening their belts, basically.
Okay, so how do you think today's going to turn out?
I'm hoping for a positive day because the US closed positive yesterday. And in fact, Asia's fairly strong this morning, strangely enough. So I'm hoping for a bounce.
Okay. Thanks, Anthea.
Pleasure. Have a good day.
There we go. Anthea Gardner and the Money Shot. It's time now for Sia to give us some inspiration and some wisdom said by Sia.
Oh, yes. Well, if you can't beat them, join them. That's the simple rule that a teacher in Harlem, New York followed. Her name is Erica Buddington, and she teaches geography. And she noticed that she needed to reinvigorate her classes in some way or another. And noticed that her kids actually like, what is our favorite song right now? Cardi B's Bodak Yellow.
Oh, you're kidding.
Oh, no.
These
oh,
poor
no.
children. What did she do?
They're in the sixth grade. And so she was like, if they like this song, then maybe I can flip the script a bit, rewrite the song for them to actually get these lessons. So she rewrote the song, performed it for them. The class now is totally into the song. And get this, from getting an average of about 60% in geography each test, after this song and how they all got into the tune, the class now scored a 92% on their geography test. So I think this is so cute and so cool.
So she replaced Cardi's lyrics with actual knowledge.
Yes. So some of the lyrics are along the lines of, said you know that the globe if you wanted to, 7 continents, 5 oceans and 4 hemispheres too. And she also said, like, during some of the tests as well, she could see the kids actually like lip sync to themselves and like sing along as they were remembering all of the answers. So she posted this on Twitter right now. The tweet has more than 51,000 retweets. Wow. And Cardi B herself even retweeted saying that she totally loves what she did. So kudos on Erica Buddington.
Line it up with the equator. It's not algebra. We'll turn up the temperature like we're in Africa. Honestly, pardon me. I'll just give you the data. It's second to the earth, biggest continent, yeah, that's Asia, yeah, it's cold, so I just put on my Nautica, if I'm trying to check south, end up in Antarctica, look, I might end up in America, north of the south, United States, Harlem, we out and about, temperate weather is great, Europe same thing, we're like, okay, we can relate, we came to play, we like the beach, we like the bay, southern, Indian, Arctic, Pacific, Atlantic, we ride the wave. We're the best in history.
I think it's so cute for sixth graders. Right. Cool. She even herself says, even though the song is not age appropriate, there's nothing we can do about that. It's really a mental game and it's a blast for students for retaining information. So cute, I think.
Yeah, but like you can't use it as a model because there's nothing worse than really bad raps.
Oh yeah.
Like especially when like your teacher tries to bust one out and it's like, oh please just kill me right now.
She sounded
like she was giving it horns.
Oh bless.
Yeah, she did. She sounded like she was having a whale of a time. Now, good for her. And you know what? Different ways of teaching people important stuff like that. That's the way we've got to start thinking about education. Obviously, the old ways have not always worked.
Mm.
The old ways.
Oh. I'll never forget a friend of mine in high school just like coming up to me because I rap a little bit and he was like forlorn. He had this, like, he was just like one of those kids that just never was going to get good marks. And he was like, yeah. And he was just like, how come I can never remember anything from class, but I know all the words to my favorite rap songs? And I was like, dude, I would love to be able to help you. But it's true, man. People can retain information if they care.
It is true, and I don't know what that formula is. For some people, it's easy to learn if you've got some kind of a tune involved. For some people, it's easier to learn if there's a pattern. Some people like to write stuff down. Some people draw pictures.
Colors in their notes.
Yeah.
Mind maps.
Yeah, all that cool stuff.
I remember trying all of that stuff. It helped me to a degree, but I was also one of those people who I would put in the least amount of effort for the most result.
Amen, man. Same as me.
Yeah, it's interesting what actually works for you because I've done everything. I remember in school and there were those tapes where you listen and like it sounds like the ocean or something. None of that worked. But particularly for me, what worked was when someone would tell me what is going on. That's why, for example, I did well in history because I always used to sit there and it was like story time.
Mm.
And then you could write, you know, when I, you know, if it's a discussion,
yeah,
I get it better. I can't study on my own or write or color or highlight. Never.
I found that rewriting the work, like writing it out for myself, would work nicely. So what I would do was not take any notes or do any of the homework stuff. And then at the end of term, borrow the notes of somebody that had done really diligent note taking.
Yeah.
Copy them by hand. Now I knew the work. And then I would teach my friends. And the process of teaching my friends would help me learn even better. That's how I got through varsity. Colette Esselar, God bless you for taking such good notes and always lending them to me. Rewrite them, then get all my friends for a boom smoking session / lecture, and I'd explain to them the work that I just learned, and they all passed as well. So it was a perfect.
Very
formula.
Good.
Shout
like
out to
it.
Colette.
Okay. We've got a couple of things to get to this morning. A bit of team talk here because we've got Disrupt, you know, every Tuesday morning here on cliffcentral.com with Mpumi Mhlapo, which is powered by T-Systems in South Africa. Times are changing. Disruption can no longer be avoided. Telltale signs that the world is gearing up for major disruption. Mpumi chats to Flux Trends translator Bronwyn Williams. This is on podcast. You can go and download it now. It was really interesting. I actually sat here listening to it yesterday. The other thing that I listened to yesterday was the Renegade Report. We got a brand new show starting tomorrow too, which is brought to you by the Naumann Stiftung, the Naumann Foundation, which I think you'll enjoy. It's basically a freedom and liberty podcast about what these terms mean. And if you're one of those people who likes to interrogate these things, hosted by Gwen Gwenya and Mark Oppenheimer. That starts tomorrow.
My aim for this day is to be able to properly pronounce that.
What?
The name?
The Naumann?
Naumann.
The Friedrich Naumann Stiftung.
Friedrich Stiftung Foundation.
Foundation.
That's all
sounds
it. Yeah.
Like a, yeah.
But it's they're a really good bunch of people. They actually organized and were behind much of the Global Media Forum that I was at in Germany this year. And they brought people together from countries all over the world to discuss issues like freedom, like the free media, like the liberal media, like having ideas of sharing views and issues, and it's a really good talk shop. And I think between Gwen and Mark, we'll have a lot of controversy and a lot of really sensible thought too. Don't miss that. But as I was saying, so if you want to hear Disrupt with Mpumi Mhlapo, you can go and listen to that podcast. It's available on cliffcentral.com. Talking to Bronwyn Williams from Flux Trends, which of course is Dion Chang's business. We spoke to Dion Chang not so long ago either. All right, on the way, we'll get into some news.
This is CliffCentral.com.